Hello. Welcome to Illinois Radio Reader. This is Lisa bringing you the News Gazette on Wednesday, June 3rd, 2026. Today on the front page is a picture of a pitcher winding up with the title Tuesday's Illini Night at Wrigley Field. Opened with defensive lineman Joe Barna throwing out the first pitch, his coach Brett Bielema and teammate Matthew Bailey handled seventh-inning stretch duties with a rendition of Take Me Out to the Ball Game. For more on the festivities, we'll head to thenewsgazette.com/podcasts and listen to Cubs executive VP and proud U of I alum Mike Lufrano's appearance on Tuesday's episode of News Gazette Radio, powered by GTPS Insurance. At the top of the front page, there's an article from Danville by Jennifer Bailey with the heading, Gamble Paying Off as Casino Enters Fourth Year. Revenue keeps creeping up and creeping up. When Rashad Wilson started as general manager at the Golden Nugget in Danville last August, he marveled at how clean the then two-year-old property was compared to other casinos that he'd been in and around the country. It's new, he said. You can actually start to lay your footprint down. The opening team did what they needed to do when they came in, and now we're more into the operating mode, so making sure that the team members are being taken care of. Everything is community-focused. While the 19,489-square-foot casino ranks number 16 of 17 in size in Illinois, it's punching above its weight in revenue through the first 4 months of the year. Golden Nugget's total adjusted gross receipts, the amount wagered minus winnings paid out, added up to $14,425. Good for 14th most statewide, which is a great thing, Wilson said. It's been meeting and exceeding goals as of now. One thing that we had to learn is really understanding what our customer is and our customer base, so that when you understand that, you can create your promotions and marketing strategies around that, centered around that. In addition to attracting patrons from Vermilion County, Wilson said that the casino draws significant business from Indiana, Lafayette, and Crawfordsville in particular, as well as from Champaign-Urbana. As the casino prepared for its third anniversary, it had its soft opening on May 7, 2023, and a grand opening that August. The GM said the focus continues to be on service. Officials are planning a car show in August in Golden Nugget's large parking lot, which Wilson said could host farmers markets and entertainment acts, and a capital project is in the works that would add a walkway connecting Saltgrass Steakhouse and the adjacent casino, meaning no more having to walk outside to get from one place to the other. The walkway still needs approval from the Illinois Gaming Board, but the hope is to be completed by August or September. An Atlanta native, Wilson started in the industry right out of college. Prior to moving to Danville, he worked for 7 casinos in 22 years, with his most recent stop, the Boomtown Casino in New Orleans. Among his priorities here, building partnerships with local charities and groups such as Vermilion Advantage and ensuring that the 240-plus casino employees are engaged and rewarded financially. The casino is currently hiring more cooks and dealers. As we keep our team members here, they serve our guests better. Thus, our guests come more often because they are more satisfied with us, Wilson said. He said the casino's visits per person has increased by more than 15% to 20%, which he credited to changes in Golden Nugget Danville's marketing strategy. Customers who visit more often spend more when they do, he said, to the tune of about $130 to $140 per person per visit, while the long-term strategy remains to add both a sports book and a hotel. Wilson said the goal now is to grow revenue from slots and table games. The casino's chief competitors aren't other casinos like the one in Terre Haute, Indiana, he said, but rather the approximately 600 video gaming terminals throughout Vermilion County, which outnumbered the 450 slot machines at the Golden Nugget. To keep patrons filing in, Wilson said, the company has invested more than $500,000 to refresh the casino floor, including the addition of new slot machines. The casino also has seen its fair share of big winners, with some walking away with $50,000 and a couple of $20,000 payouts in May. "We love when they win," Wilson said. "If they're winning, then it spreads the word that we are a lucky place to play in." The more action the casino attracts, the more revenue its home city brings in. For the first 4 months of 2026 alone, Danville's local share of the casino's $12,470,000 in electronic game revenue and $1,958,000 in table game revenues was $8,339,708. It's been well north of that in the 2 full years the casino has been in business. In 2024, Danville cut the $37 million in casino revenues was $2 million. In 2025, the city took in $2 million from the $39 million the Golden Nugget made after paying out winnings. And this year is off to a faster start than the 2 previous years, with admissions in the first 4 months jumping from 106,110 in 2025 to 118,274 in 2026, according to Illinois Gaming Board data. In return, Wilson would like to see more mixed-use housing in the Lynch Road area off of Interstate 74, surrounding the casino, which would, he said, lead to repeat business. "What else can we bring to the city to make Danville like it was before?" Wilson asked, before rattling off items on the wish list: new businesses, restaurants, pickleball tournaments, and leveraging more events through Danville Area Community College. Danville Mayor Ricky Williams Jr. said the casino's presence has led to more inquiries about development in the Lynch Road area. "Although nothing has come to fruition yet, we've seen more interest in the land out there and some commercial development," Williams said. "I really appreciate the casino that has become part of the community," he added, noting its sponsorship of events and going above and beyond their presence. Continuing on the front page, an article about Interstate 5774 interchange. Traffic stops yield trafficking charges. Trio allegedly had 6 pounds of pot in the vehicle, by Luke Taylor. A trio of Effingham residents are facing drug trafficking charges after more than 6.5 pounds of cannabis was found in their vehicle during a traffic stop near the Interstate 5774 interchange in Champaign. Jaden Plopper, 22, Jessica Donaldson, 42, and Ryan French, 42, all appeared in court Tuesday to be arraigned on identical charges. Champaign County Judge Chad Beckett said that each had been charged with 1 count of cannabis trafficking, 1 count of unlawful delivery of cannabis, and 1 count of possession of cannabis with intent to deliver. The amount of cannabis identified in the charges was more than 2,500 grams, but less than 5,000 grams. State's Attorney Julia Reitz told the News Gazette that the charges arose from a traffic stop that an Illinois State Trooper initiated around 7 p.m. Monday on a vehicle that was speeding in a construction zone on southbound I-57 near the interchange. Plopper was driving while French and Donaldson were passengers. The trooper smelled what they believed to be the odor of raw cannabis coming from inside the vehicle, which led to a search that Reed said turned up 2,460 grams of raw cannabis and 569.5 grams in cartridges, blunts, and wax. All three defendants admitted to visiting Michigan to obtain it. If convicted of cannabis trafficking in that amount, which is a Class 1 felony, each faces a sentence of 8 to 30 years in prison. And the final article on the front page of the News Gazette today from the Urbana City Council with the title, "Proposed Police Engagement Office Faces Vote," by Jana Wiersema. City Council members will vote next week on the Urbana Police Department's proposal to lease 2,700 square feet in the Sunnycrest Center for a community engagement and violence prevention office. Lieutenant Matthew McKinney told the City Council on Monday that having the office at this location aligns with Mayor Deshaun Williams' Philo Road Ahead initiative. Our crime data has supported the need for increased presence in the area, he added. Plans include offices for the community engagement sergeant, the community engagement officer, the co-response clinician, the behavioral health detective, and the community engagement liaison, as well as workstations for clergy patrol members. The department also plans to use some of the suite for officer wellness space as well as meeting space to help grow community partnerships, McKinney said. Additionally, a large parking lot would allow the department to host outdoor events. The goal is to create a space where people will have the ability to come in, he told city council members when asked about public access. It will be largely by appointment when we will set it up or have the availability. There will be some walk-in times that we'll try and make available. We want to make it a welcoming space, but we also have to recognize that there will be operational needs in when people will be there and when they're available. The council voted 4-2 to put the proposed lease at 1717 South Philo Road, Suite 16, on an upcoming regular agenda for a vote. Alderman Chris Evans and Grace Wilkin were the two votes in opposition. Over the past couple years, both Wilkin and Evans have been critical of Police Chief Larry D. Boone's proposal to create a community engagement team within his department. I will consistently be against this program, as I have been throughout the many years that it has failed to launch in the past, Wilkins said on Monday night. I think that there are serious issues with the community input process and how this has not been collaborative or very methodical. She also feels that the police department has not provided sufficient information about what the community engagement program will entail. I don't know that this is the most efficient, safe, and effective way to address the needs of the area and prevent violence, Wilkins said. On the other hand, Alderman Verdell Jones III, the newest member of the council, believes that the office and its community partners could help address issues before they escalate into emergencies. When a young man sees a cop on the street, he's not going to go up and talk to them because of that automatic fear, Jones said. I believe that this center can help to be a safe space to bridge those different worlds together. Open up dialogue for communication, too. Because guess what? Right now, look around us. There's shootings every day, every week. So the status quo of what we've been doing is not working. Continuing to Section A5, there's a short article from Rantoul. That it's under investigation about the coroner IDs the man who died at the Rantoul pool. A 59-year-old Rantoul man who died after experiencing a medical emergency at a local swimming pool Monday has been identified. The Champaign County Coroner's Office on Tuesday said Sean Berenger was pronounced dead at 4:45 p.m. at Carl Foundation Hospital after an incident at the Hap Parker Family Aquatic Center in Rantoul. An autopsy has been scheduled. The incident remains under investigation by the Champaign County Coroner's Office. About 4 p.m. on Monday, the Rantoul Fire Department, Rantoul Police Department, and Aero Ambulance were dispatched to a medical emergency at the pool. They arrived within 3 minutes of the initial dispatch and found lifeguards performing CPR on Mr. Berenger, who was then treated and taken to the hospital, where he later died. Initial investigation determined he was submerged in the water before a lifeguard noticed a problem and began a rescue. Staff at the pool said he was removed within 30 seconds, and CPR began immediately when he was placed on the pool deck. In a joint statement, the village and fire department recognized heroic efforts on the lifeguards involved. They also asked the community to come together with thoughts and prayers for Mr. Berenger's family and those involved in the rescue efforts. Continuing on to Section B4, an article from Danville, 10 Years Above and Beyond, by Jennifer Bailey, Flying High at Kennecook. County Park ready to be festival's new home, starting with 10th anniversary. Balloons Over Vermilion is marking its 10th anniversary by moving up a month in summer and to a new site in Kennecook County Park. And organizers couldn't be more excited for all the new and returning activities for 2026. This year's version of the annual festival is set for Friday and Saturday, with a theme of 10 years above and beyond. This 10th anniversary is a celebration of the community that has supported Balloons Over Vermilion from the beginning, said Dean Carlton, event co-chair. With new additions like the drone show and kite displays, we're excited to create even more unforgettable experiences for families and visitors. Co-chair Carly Goodwin said the 35-member steering committee and 9-member board of community volunteers have been busy making this year's event another fun time for families. The move from Vermilion Regional Airport to Kennecuck is a big deal, Goodwin said. The airport played host for the first 10 years of the event's current incarnation and also during the Oldsmobile Balloon Classic's 15-year run. This is our first time trying somewhere new, and a lot of people ask, what happened? Goodwin said, adding, some assume something happened with the airport. That's not the case. We have a very, very good working relationship with the airport. She said the airport's directors have been very supportive of the event, but a lot of attendees don't realize that the airport has to remain open during the festival, which means setup is pretty intense to make sure that everyone remains safe. So, if an airplane is to land during the event, we need to make sure that those people attending the festival, and that is all logistically coordinated. She said it's important for the airport to remain open, as some of the bigger employees use it regularly, and they can't miss deliveries. They have worked with us just as well as they possibly can to keep that working for them and for us, but it does create some logistical challenges, Goodwin said. She said they owe the airport a lot for letting them take over for the last decade. This year's events will again have 30 regular hot air balloons, 2 special shaped balloons, a baby dinosaur, and Voluntold, which features animals peeking out in tribute to the first flight of living creatures in 1783 by the Montgolfier brothers in Versailles, France. The 2 tethered balloons, in addition to the returning children's activities and food vendors. The new location provides opportunities to try some new activities organizers have been dreaming about for the last 10 years. We have wanted to do a number of things to improve the festival, and because of Federal Aviation Administration regulations and, again, keeping a runway open, we really confined to our space, Goodwin said. We don't have a lot more space that we can go at that airport, and we can't put everything in the air at the airport that we would like to. Among those new activities are a 5K run with more than 100 runners, kite displays from 3 to 6 p.m. each day while balloons are grounded by Chicago Kites, a professional kite company, and a nightly 300 drone grand finale produced by Flylight Drone Shows, which produces shows at the Albuquerque International Balloon Fiesta in New Mexico. Goodwin said the drone show is customized for the community. We are excited for the 10 years of balloons, the 200th anniversary of the county, and we are just really looking forward to having that drone show, she said. Balloons Over Vermilion has retained its partnership with the city of Danville and is also partnering with the Vermilion County Conservation District this year. Jamie Pasquale, executive director of the Conservation District, said he hopes the weather will cooperate. Pasquale said the event is using about 100 acres of the 3,000-acre county park, mostly around the Bunker Hill Historic Area. Balloons will be in the field north and west of the Lorry Barn. Vendors will be south of the barn, and parking will be to the east of the historic area. The 5K run also starts at the Lorry Barn. Our involvement is we're keeping the grounds mowed in the event area and providing some picnic areas, he said, adding that the city also is providing some tables. The Balloons Over Vermilion Committee is handling all the parking, vendors, and festival aspects. Pasquale said that they are taking precautions for the traffic. Attendance fees will be collected at a spot inside the park about 1.5 miles from the entrance on Hennin Road. So the line shouldn't back out of the park, he said, adding that they are wanting to get cars in and parked quickly. When the festival ends each evening, the park road will be converted into a two-lane exit road, Pasquale added. Pasquale said that when balloons over Vermilion officials approached the district about locating the festival there, he thought it made sense. They've launched balloons for years from here, he said. We know we could have balloons. The district has blocked off Kennecook Pavilion rentals during the event and a few days surrounding it. We're going to let people in the park in the mornings, but by mid-afternoon we're going to have signage that the park is going to be closed from this point on, Pasquale said about the festival, adding that regular park users won't want to get caught up in that traffic. Pasquale said the district's board was happy to approve hosting the event. There was no question there. It's a community event, Pasquale said of the festival, which donates a lot of money back to local organizations to support children's projects and programs. He said Balloons Over Vermilion also has supported conservation district projects, including the Kickapoo Rail Trail and park playgrounds. New to this year's Balloon Over Vermilion Festival above, and there's a picture of a nightly 300 drone grand finale by Flylight Drone Shows, which also produces shows at the Albuquerque International Balloon Fiesta in New Mexico, and then another picture of a giant kite display by Chicago Kites, a professional kite company, running from 3 to 6 each day. Looks like a lot of fun. Let's jump back to Section A4 with an opinion piece by J. Mark Powell in his Holy Cow History. And there is a black and white photo of President Richard Nixon shaking hands, and as he does, his sleeve hangs loose while he's shaking hands with well-wishers during a May 25, 1971 visit to Mobile, Alabama. And the title is The Missing Presidential Cufflink. It was a very busy day for Richard Nixon. From the moment Air Force One touched down in Mobile, Alabama on May 25, 1971, it was a nonstop whirlwind of events. Governor George Wallace, who had run against Nixon for the presidency in 1968 and would do so again a year later, greeted him. A newlywed, Wallace's second wife, was already making her influence over him known. The Democrats' usual dark business suit was hanging in a closet back in the governor's mansion, replaced by a wild, ultra-modern white suit with a salmon shirt and plaid salmon tie. That was, after all, the mercifully brief Peacock Revolution, when outlandish garish colors dominated swinging 70 fashions. The president was followed by a high-profile entourage, including his daughter Julie and her husband David Eisenhower, Ike's grandson and the namesake of the presidential retreat, Camp David, along with three GOP congressmen and Nixon's recent Postmaster General, Alabamian Winton Blount. After formally dedicating the new Tennessee Tombigbee Waterway Project, it was off to Birmingham, where Nixon addressed newspaper editors from around the Southeast. It was there that the presidential party encountered the trip's only momentary unpleasantness. Some Peace Party demonstrators tried to block the motorcade. This was the waning days of the Vietnam War, and the war protests were still common. Wallace leaned out of the presidential limousine window and was heard telling his security detail, "Tell him that's far enough, boys." The motorcade passed on without incident. Apart from that, Nixon's six-hour visit to the heart of Dixie was a love fest. An estimated 180,000 people lined the route in both cities to wave and cheer. A journalist traveling with the president reported reading signs proclaiming, "Wetumpka loves Nixon. Y'all come back soon." And "Right on, Brother Nixon. Alabama believes in apple pie, motherhood, and Mr. Nixon. Richard Nixon, superstar." That last point was underscored in an unusual way during the first leg of the trip. Mobile turned out in force to welcome the president, as Nixon's limo wound its way through cheering crowds, every so often it would stop so he could jump out and shake hands with the folks he always called my fellow Americans. But pressing the presidential flesh in a jostling, exciting crowd can turn into a contact sport. As people reached, stretched, and grabbed Nixon's hand, a cufflink came loose from his shirt. He was seen for a while with the sleeve flapping until a replacement was found for him. When the exciting moment had passed and the motorcade had moved on, a young woman spotted something lying on the ground, and thus began Deborah Norman's 15 minutes of fame. The 18-year-old was a senior at a local Catholic high school. It didn't take her long to do the right thing. She immediately wrote a letter explaining that she found the missing link and asked if it was okay for her to hold on to it as a keepsake. But she added she'd be happy to send it to the president if it held sentimental value to him. Imagine her surprise when a short time later a small parcel was delivered to her home with a return address that simply said, "The White House." Nixon wrote back saying, "Losing cufflinks has become one of the minor handicaps of a career in public life, but I was glad to hear that your alertness has brought the happy return of the cufflink I lost when I was visiting in Mobile. In this case, it means the return of something my daughter Julie had given me." He wanted to make it up to her, however. He sent her a different set of presidential cufflinks, explaining that they were the ones that he had worn that day after losing Julie's gift, plus a bronze makeup compact engraved with the presidential seal. A photo of Deborah proudly displaying her presidential swag appeared in newspapers around the country. Then, just as fast as it had happened, the incident disappeared. However, it was never forgotten by the family who had experienced it. Richard Nixon is remembered today for many things, some good, some less than good, but the case of the missing cufflink reminds us that presidents are just people after all. That brief moment spoke volumes about one chief executive's love for his daughter and his kindness toward the girl who had restored the cherished memento his child had given him. Let's continue on with an article about another article about the balloons over Vermilion. This one's from Westville, with the title "Westville Pin Collector Keeping His Set Complete" by Jennifer Bailey. Of course, the highlight of Balloons Over Vermilion Festival is seeing the colorful hot air balloons. But for a pin collector like Gary DeHay of Westville, it's also getting his hands on the annual event pin. The first stop we make every year is to the souvenir tent, where the pins are located, DeHay said. I wait in anticipation to see the new design each year. This year will mark the 33rd lapel pin that he will add to his collection, dating back to when the Danville Balloon Classic began in 1987 at the Vermilion Regional Airport, where it ran for 15 years. This is the 10th anniversary for Balloons Over Vermilion. The new pin's red, white, and blue design has Balloons Over Vermilion 2026 on it, as well as the logo for this year's theme, 10 Years Above and Beyond. Dean Carlton, event co-chair, said the pins remain popular in addition to pilot cards, which are like baseball cards that children can collect and have signed by the pilots, as well as temporary tattoos of the balloons. There's a whole genre who just trade and buy hot air balloon pins, he said. The Balloons Over Vermilion pins designs have evolved as organizers now use a marketing company, he said. These pins are pretty big. They also give the pins out to the pilots, sponsors, and students in the host classes. In 2020, the pin had already been produced when the COVID-19 pandemic canceled that year's event, so it was used in 2021 instead. The 2022 pin produced had both 2021 and 2022 on it. The pins and pilot cards have long been collector's items. Carlton said that some kids have card books filled with the pilot cards through the years. The temporary tattoos are newer and feature balloons in the shape of golden retrievers. Carlton gives them away to kids. He said he thinks that every annual pin and special pin release, though, and he might be missing one or two, but he's very proud of his collection. And we're going to take a break here with the first half of the News Gazette. I'll return in a moment.